From KALW News in San Francisco, today we're taking a look at the Summer of Love.
This following program is dedicated to the city and people of San Francisco, who may not know it, but they are beautiful.
There are a lot of stereotypes and a lot of preconceptions, a lot that isn't remembered correctly.
65 and 66 is, I think, what, when you think of the Summer of Love, that's actually what you're thinking of, even though 67 is when it goes bad.
It's a movement that forever changed this city and the country.
The whole slow food movement, the carbon footprint idea, yoga and meditation, right? It used to be a weird hippie thing. Now it's become mainstream.
Today, we're remembering the Summer of Love in this original documentary from KALW News with David Boyer and The Intersection coming up next. By the summer of 1967, the scene in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district was turning dark. Instead of just being about peace, love, and happiness, that summer in the Haight was also plagued by overcrowding, violence, bad drugs, and deprivation. In many ways, that summer was the end of an era in San Francisco. The Doolin Larson Building at the corner of Haight Street and Ashbury was named a national treasure recently by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And today, in this special edition of The Intersection, KALW's David Boyer explains how it all began. He digs into the archives and the memories of the folks who were there in the 1960s, and he separates the history from the myths around the Summer of Love and its supposed epicenter, the corner of Haight and Ashbury.
CBS News, without any flowers in its hair, is in San Francisco because this city has gained the reputation of being the hippie capital of the world.
50 years ago, as many as 100,000 young adults crowded into San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. They came from all over the country, from small towns and big cities, from the coasts and the heartland. At the time, it was unclear what it all meant and what it would leave behind. But we begin not at the corner of Haight and Ashbury, but all the way across town in San Francisco's North Beach neighborhood. It's sometime in the 1950s, let's say 1958. The jazz clubs and cafes and bookstores are filled with so-called beatniks. As most of the country conforms to the straight-laced father-knows-best mores of the time, these folks are drinking, debating, writing, and carrying on. This is where Arthur Rown meets other soon-to-be hippies. But I meet Arthur amidst the bustling crowd at the DeYoung Museum's Summer of Love exhibit, drawn in by his head-to-toe purple outfit and his mischievous smile.
We all found one another by going to North Beach because it was the only happening place in town. And so if you wanted entertainment, you'd go to North Beach, which we do almost every night, smoke pot, listen to music.
But by the early 1960s, the beatnik identity became more commercialized.
It was like we'd grown out of being a beatnik.
They'd also been priced out of the neighborhood.
So from North Beach, it sprung to the Haight-Ashbury because there was cheap rent.
Cheap, as in $95 a month for a one-bedroom apartment at the corner of Haight and Ashbury, which was half of what places were going for in North Beach and elsewhere in the city. Arthur remembers what Haight Street was like then.
Haight Street was a street that wasn't used very much, and you'd find storefronts that were just empty. Because the rents were cheap, people like ourselves, the hippies, could rent a small storefront and sell incense or pipes or posters and kind of thrive.
They weren't called hippies yet. Some identified as freaks as opposed to squares. Others were still bohemians and beatniks. In fact, the first mainstream media mention of hippies on the West Coast wasn't until September of 1965. That's when Michael Fallon published a series of articles in the San Francisco Examiner about the burgeoning scene. The title of the first piece, A New Paradise for Beatniks. And this is how Fallon describes it.
Haight-Ashbury is the city's new bohemian quarter for serious writers, painters and musicians, civil rights workers, crusaders for all kinds of causes, homosexuals, lesbians, marijuana users, young working couples of artistic bent, the hippies, the heads, the beatniks.
The posters and designs of Stanley Mouse are displayed all over the DeYoung exhibit. When I ask one of the museum staff where I might find him, the man says, "Look for the guy who looks like Manson's younger brother." I spot him immediately. Stanley is part of the duo that designed the Grateful Dead's iconic album covers. And here's how he remembers the scene in 1965.
Every day was like a month or a week. And there was so much happening all at once. And the old shops here were full of really nice clothes, you know, like Edwardian clothes. And so everybody dressed up in costumes and came to the dances and danced and almost every night, you know, it was great.
Hulking, crazed whirlpool. Lights and movies sweeping around the hall.
Strobes exploding.
Black lights with day-glow objects.
A troop of weird girls and leotards
leaping around the edges. Heads from all over.
The dancing is ecstatic.
Ecstatic.
A nice macaroni of braless breasts jiggling and cupcake bottoms wiggling.
Multiple arms writhing. The Haight-Ashbury era began that weekend.
That's how Tom Wolfe describes the Trips Festival in his book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. It was January 1966, and many of the soon-to-be legends were there. Janis Joplin, Bill Graham, Jerry Garcia, Ken Kesey, and so many more. Counterculture luminaries Stuart Brand and Roland Giacopetti remember the event in the documentary Trips Festival 1966.
I think Tom Wolfe was right to say that the Haight-Ashbury was born at the Trips Festival in the sense that on the order of 10,000 hippies showed up, and we didn't really know, nobody knew. Including the 10,000 hippies, that there were 10,000 hippies.
It was a huge extended family that just identified itself more and more. And to me, one of the major things about the Trips Festival was that it was one of the first opportunities for all these freaks to get out into the open and look at each other and say, gee, are there really this many of us? And there was.
That weekend marked the debut of the Grateful Dead and an underground acid-fueled movement. And the role acid played cannot be minimized. As I walk around the DeYoung exhibit and meet some of the fashion and graphic designers who created the look of the era, the conversation inevitably turns to LSD. One after another, they sing the praises of the psychedelic, including poster artist Stanley Mouse and fashion designer Jeannie Rose.
LSD was legal then, and people were experimenting with psychedelics. And somehow they all those people gathered in San Francisco magically, and they formed rock and roll bands, and they all had great music, great art.
I did take LSD, and it was a real revelation. The feelings that you got, the visual images,
and all the images were coming like mad, like wildfire.
It really changed my life. Forever.
California's soon-to-be governor Ronald Reagan had a different take on LSD.
There is nothing smart, there is nothing grown up or sophisticated in taking an LSD trip at all. They're just being complete fools.
On October 6th, 1966, LSD became illegal in California. To mark the occasion, denizens of the Haight-Ashbury gathered for one last communal trip called the Love Pageant. And one local reporter from KTVU tried to make sense of it.
First thing that became apparent was that the LSD Love Fest had not attracted what you would call a conventional crowd. The music stopped only occasionally. There were few, if any, political pronouncements, and it was hard to see how a gathering such as this could have any effect on a political base. Yeah, what are you trying to prove?
I don't think there's anything trying to be proved here. I think it's a very tremendous amount of people standing in a park enjoying a very beautiful day.
I'm Hannah Baba, and you're listening to Remembering the Summer of Love, an original production of The Intersection from David Boyer, produced with KALW News. Now, let's get back to David.
The news media was beginning to catch on, and not just the local press. Throughout 1966, national papers and TV news were filled with stories about psychedelics on campus, the arrests of Timothy Leary and Ken Kesey, as well as student activism and anti-war protests. The media hadn't coalesced around the hippie label just yet, but they knew something was up. And on January 14, 1967, that something announced itself to the world. The Human Bien was billed as a gathering of the tribes, the political activists, the hip community, the spiritual devotees, and, quote, contingents from the emerging revolutionary generation. Because, in reality, across the bay, the free speech and anti-war movements were already established in Berkeley, and the Black Panthers were emerging in Oakland. Down in Big Sur, the Human Potential movement was taking root at the Esalen Institute, and up in Marin and Sonoma, early Back to the Landers were starting farms and communes. These divergent movements came together in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, and the godfather of LSD, Timothy Leary, delivered this clarion call to the more than 35,000 assembled.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out. Drop out of high school, drop out of college, drop out of graduate school, drop out of junior executive. Turn on, tune in, drop out.
Thousands upon thousands across the country answered his call, and they began arriving in droves on Haight Street that spring.
If you're going to San Francisco.
The media was not far behind.
The city of San Francisco has been warned of a hippie invasion come summer in numbers almost too staggering to comprehend.
Of course, it's hard to predict the exact moment, but if I were looking for the beginning of the end, I'd probably go with April 5th, 1967. That's the day Gray Line began offering a bus tour of Haight-Ashbury to the curious who wanted to get a look at the new hippie scene they were hearing about.
Now at this point, we're going to leave Golden Gate Park to go into the Haight-Ashbury district. This is the new avant-garde left bank of the so-called hippies, and this is the heart of it now as we turn here onto the street.
That same day, a coalition of folks who participated in the Trips Festival and the Human Bien held a news conference. Their goal was to establish a bit of order out of what was beginning to feel like chaos.
The Haight-Ashbury community has created the Council for a Summer of Love in San Francisco.
In the process, they coined a catchy name for the youth pilgrimage, the Summer of Love.
The Council for a Summer of Love proclaims a summer of love in the city of San Francisco. We believe that Haight-Ashbury is the focus of a universal spiritual awakening. The Summer of Love is an expression of this awakening.
But the hippies became the boogeymen and women of the nightly news. Parents went to bed each evening fearing their teenagers might run away to the Haight-Ashbury in the middle of the night.
The hippies are young. Their average age is 20.
Most of them come from middle-class homes. They are well-educated, or could be if they wanted to.
They've dropped out from the society that they call the straight world, and they're looking for personal answers in a deliberately psychedelic world of color, light, and mind-expanding drugs. Marijuana, called grass, and LSD, called acid.
The movement appears to be growing. Use of drugs appears to be spreading. There is the real danger that more and more young people may follow the call to turn on, tune in, drop out.
But these reports only spread the word, sending more and younger people to an already packed Haight Street. The sidewalks became an uneasy mix of hippies and gawking tourists. And throughout the spring, the pillars of the hippie community warned the city that tens of thousands more were to come. They begged the city to prepare and provide services, but the city refused. Instead, the mayor made it clear that, quote, such migration is unwelcome, and the city of San Francisco cannot provide food and shelter for such persons. The city's police chief, Thomas Cahill, promised to maintain law and order.
Chief, are you threatening to kick them out of San Francisco?
I never said a word about that, but I will take whatever police action is necessary, and nobody should let their young children come into San Francisco unsupervised to become a part of a group such as that.
50 years later, for most people, the Summer of Love conjures up the peak of the movement. But the reality was quite different, according to the young curators Colleen Terry, Jill D'Alessandro, and some of the folks I meet at the exhibit.
65 and 66 is, I think, what, when you think of the Summer of Love, that's actually what you're thinking of, even though 67 is when it goes bad.
And it was great for all 1966, and then the media picked up on it, and then the summer came, and all the kids came from everywhere who wanted to join in on the Summer of Love, and everything went to hell.
The summer started well enough with the Monterey International Pop Festival and a solstice celebration in Golden Gate Park. But the rest of that season was less about big meaningful events and more about the scene.
A bunch of people came and fed on it. They saw all these young kids, they wanted to take advantage of them. They started selling bad drugs.
They got overrun. Got overrun with bad drugs and violence and...
Thousands of people were coming to the street every day and there was no place for them to stay and eat or to make money.
Essentially, they were homeless. Some were runaways and many were young and didn't have a plan. While the city refused to provide services, the community came together and did its best to care for its newest arrivals. They established the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, and a group called the Diggers opened a free store where newcomers could pick up essentials. The Diggers also handed out free hot food in the neighborhood's parks. But ultimately, this was not what peace, love, and happiness was supposed to look like. The Diggers, and many of those who helped start the movement, knew it was time for it to end. The Haight was feeling less like utopia and more like a war zone. And so, on October 6th, 1967, they assembled one last time for the Death of Hippie event.
We carried a coffin down Haight Street, and people threw beads and trinkets into the coffin, and then it was taken down to the Panhandle, which is just right outside of Haight, and burned, as a pyre is burned. And we had the Death of Hippie event to beat the media its own game, trying to.
The hippies strike back. They hold a mock funeral to symbolize the death of the term hippie. Complete with make-believe corpse, the funeral also marks the birth of a new name for the sandals, beard, and bead set. They want to be known as America's free men, or freebies.
As the scene came apart in the Haight, the rest of the world was just catching up. Still to come, Woodstock, Altamont, Easy Rider, and Kent State. 50 years later, there are still remnants of the shockingly brief era. There's the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic. There's several generations of deadheads and a new generation of street kids. There's Huckleberry House, which began as a shelter for runaways during the Summer of Love and continues to provide shelter and support for homeless youth in the neighborhood. And then there's the proprietor of the tie-dyed emporium Love and Haight, less than a block from the corner of Haight and Ashbury. In 2017, this red-haired, glitter-loving 30-something is on a crusade to keep the spirit of the hippies alive.
I'm Sunshine Powers. People call me Sunny. I'm a native San Franciscan, and I am a resident and a business owner in the Haight-Ashbury. My shop here, I call it the Rainbow Gateway to Haight Street.
So tell me how you ended up in the Haight.
I used to skip high school and come to the Haight. I used to meet my friends here. I smoked my first bowl here. I met my first boyfriend here. I mourn the loss of Jerry Garcia here. And after Jerry died, I didn't really come back to the Haight. And about 5 years ago, my original business partners and I bought this shop, and we made it our mission to revitalize Haight Street and to bring forth the color, creativity, and consciousness that Haight Street is historically known for. What happened here 50 years ago changed who we are as a society. And it is our duty as members of this community to respect that, honor that, and to shape the next 50 years for the better.
Did you ever feel like you were born in the wrong time period?
You have connections with an era. You feel like you've been someplace before. Was I alive in the Summer of Love? Maybe. Highly possible. I have been here before. I will come here again. Haight Street is who I am. You know, I belong to it. I don't think I'm ever going to leave. And I am teaching the next generation about the magic that happened here.
Sunny plans to stay put. But after the original Summer of Love, as the Haight descended into chaos, many of the early hippies fled San Francisco. Still, they refused to give up on their utopian ideals. Instead, they established communes and started families and farms up and down the West Coast and beyond. While the rest of America was having a serious love affair with TV dinners and all things processed, many hippies were becoming pioneers of the Back to the Land movement and organic farming, and others were setting off on a spiritual path.
It's amazing. You know, the whole slow food movement, the carbon footprint idea, yoga and meditation, right? All of this. It used to be a weird hippie thing. Now it's like a regular thing. It's become mainstream. And that's why I get why the media didn't understand the hippies. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on at the time, man. You had like civil rights, gay rights, birth control, STDs, psychedelics. People get paranoid when change happens, and change freaks people out. And that's kind of what the 60s were. It was like, change in your face, right? And it freaked a lot of people out. And then it was like, oh, wait, this is cool, but you're still weird. But now we're doing yoga. But it's our responsibility to know the true story.
Ultimately, the hippies, together with the free speech, black power, and anti-war movements, created an atmosphere that helped launch the gay rights movement in the 70s and Burning Man in the 1990s. The hippie movement encouraged society to question conventional wisdom about gender, sexuality, self-expression, domestic life, and more. 50 years on, tourists still flock to the corner of Haight and Ashbury. Arthur Round lived in a commune a half a block from the intersection. As he sees it, not much has changed over the years.
During the Summer of Love, it was nothing more spectacular than it is now, and it's not spectacular now. And so people go to this corner, Haight and Ashbury, and the only thing there is the ice cream shop, Ben and Jerry's. But now, capitalizing on this, they've actually made miniature street signs that say Haight and Ashbury that they have out in front of their stores. They've actually set up the picture, so people now have a place to stand that said that they were at Haight and Ashbury. But other than that, there's nothing happening there.
Still, in all likelihood, there will be a steady stream of out-of-towners at this corner all summer long, ordering Cherry Garcia cones and taking selfies in front of the Ben & Jerry's. That's because the San Francisco Travel Association has turned the Summer of Love into one big tourism come-on. They've blanketed the international terminal at San Francisco Airport with billboards and released this ad on YouTube.
It was more than a summer. It was a movement. And it could have only happened in one city, San Francisco. Join us as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. Visit San Francisco and be part of another history-making moment. San Francisco, always a good trip.
Eventually, the city that once shunned the hippies became the progressive capital of the United States, if not the world. It was ground zero of the gay rights movement and fight against AIDS. It's the first city to offer free college tuition, ban plastic bags, require composting, and allow same-sex marriage. And now, it's the focal point of the tech revolution. But as thousands upon thousands of millennials come here to work and housing prices soar, the city is struggling to maintain its progressive laissez-faire identity. Remember that one-bedroom apartment at the corner of Haight and Ashbury? You know, the one that was $95 a month back in the day? Well, I recently spotted an ad on Craigslist for the same apartment. The rent, $3,495. What a long, strange trip indeed. For KLW and The Intersection, I'm David Boyer.